At the start of the 2018 year, new IEEE President Jim Jeffries had appointed Dr. Greg Adamson to a new IEEE position, IEEE's ethics champion. Exactly what this new position was to do was never learned, in spite of requests made to find that out. Therefore, we, the Concerned Ethics Volunteers, the CEV, continued our multi-year efforts of submitting papers to the new ethics leader, Greg Adamson, the person who held that or equivalent positions the previous years of 2016 and 2017. In addition, we, the CEV, reached out and had four articles published as blogs in the Institute. This will give you a summary of the four articles. First one, do IEEE's ethics policies and practices support its tagline, Advancing Technology for Humanity? This is the first in a series of posts about IEEE's current ethics policies and practices. I'd like to inform IEEE members about two rights of theirs denied them for nearly 20 years, ethics advice and ethical support. The denial has occurred in spite of an abundance of higher-level governance materials that contradict this practice, including policies and bylaws. According to the IEEE Constitution, you, the members, have the authority to correct the problem. This post is a factual account that covers the history, policies, practices, and efforts made to correct this practice, even though it was unsuccessful. The second blog is titled Significant Milestones Over the Past 40 Years. In 1978, IEEE formed the Member Conduct Committee, the MCC. Three members of the Concerned Ethics Volunteers, the CEV, were part of the IEEE United States Activities Board Task Force that drafted the original procedures to govern the new committee. The MCC was empowered to discipline members who violated its code of ethics and to provide advice and ethical support to members whose employment was being placed in jeopardy for striving to uphold the code. Also in 1978, IEEE approved supporting member Virginia Egerton, an engineer who had been fired for striving to correct degradation in the New York City 911 system as a result of a new police dispatch system being designed. Egerton was the second recipient of the Barris Award. The three BART engineers were the first recipients. 10 years later, member Salvador Castro found a design defect in one of his company's infant incubators and tried to get it corrected. The company refused to fix the flaw, and Castro was fired. He appealed to the IEEE by way of its new ethics hotline. The Member Conduct Committee accepted his case, and the IEEE Board of Directors voted to provide him with ethical support and to enter his case when it reached the courts. He also received the Barris Award. Nearly 20 years after the MCC was established, IEEE finally formed its first ethics committee. During a 2 to 3 year period in the mid-1990s, it was instrumental in getting IEEE to approve several new ethics practices. One required those renewing their membership to agree to abide by the code of ethics as a condition of membership. Another was publishing articles about ethics topics in the Institute on a bi-monthly basis. But the most important new activity was the establishment of the Ethics Hotline. It was staffed by IEEE volunteers at no cost to the organization. Volunteers would handle ethics inquiries in their areas of specialty either by phone or email. For example, when Salvador Castro asked for support, member Mel Benjamin, a medical engineer, met with him, evaluated his request, and concurred that it had merit. The committee forwarded his request to the MCC, which I was a member of and helped handle it, which agreed and persuaded the board of directors to support him. The third blog was titled, When Advice and Support Went Dark. During 1997 and 1998, a high activity period for the IEEE Ethics Committee, there developed a pattern of terminating several key ethics support services. Up until then, each had operated effectively and without any problems. such as the Ethics Hotline, ethics articles being published by the Institute, and a liaison with the Member Conduct Committee, which I performed. During IEEE Board of Directors' deliberations about terminating those efforts, the Ethics Committee Chair then, Member Stephen Unger, was not allowed to even sit in. Recommendations to not dissolve the programs by the Board's own high-level task force, formed to review and advise it on the matter, were rejected. Shortly thereafter, members who supported the continuation of the services were removed from both the Ethics and the Member Conduct Committee. Also in 1998, about the time when the Ethics Committee's activities had been most successful, an IEEE past president and a member of the IEEE Member Conduct Committee, of which I was a member and was present, said at a committee meeting, which I attended, quote, "I do not believe that IEEE should get involved in employee-employer disputes," unquote. Because IEEE's constitution already prohibited engaging in matters that trade unions and collective bargaining dealt with, his statement applied only to ethical and professional activities. The proposal by another past IEEE president, who happened to chair the MCC at that time, to establish an ethics conflict resolution service that would have provided advice, education, a board to hear cases, and mediation was never acted upon and never explained why. Key pro-ethics members of both committees, such as Steve Unger, Ray Larson, and myself, each who are current members of the IEEE Concerned Ethics Volunteers, the CEV, were summarily removed from the committees. That began what I call the dark ethics period, which continues to this day. Now, the fourth and last blog that we wrote, that was published in the Institute, was titled, Nine Ways to Restore Ethics Advice and Support to Strengthen Its Tagline. My earlier blog entries have been about the past, but what about the future? The solution resides in the hands of you, the members, particularly the younger members. On the other hand, there has been a suggestion that it may require a pro-ethics IEEE president to exert new leadership and steer the organization in a different direction as it has been for the last 20 years. But here are several actions that I think should take place. One recommendation is to separate the Ethics Committee from new regional member conduct committees which should be created. This would enable the MCCs to interpret local laws, customs, and industry norms in their respective local areas. Also, the Ethics Committee could take on more of a legislative role, whereas the MCCs would be more judicial. So here are the nine steps that could be taken. Young IEEE members need to get involved and take action. Make sure the board revises items 1.3 and 1.4 in the EMCC Operations Manual. Work for the IEEE Constitution to be amended. You, the young members, have the authority and the control to be able to do that. Once it's amended, a board cannot change it. Only the members can. Reorganize the EMCC to be more responsive and accountable. Empower the Technical Activities Board, TAB, to create ethical implementation guidelines in each of its technical specialties. Provide ethics education to members. Cooperate with other engineering societies. Remain vigilant about what the IEEE board is doing. And lastly, consider assigning a trustee to oversee the operation of these entities. Now, one positive action which occurred during this 2018 year was a WebEx telecon meeting convened by then 2019 President Jose Mora, which is covered next in the repository. Lastly, other than these few reportable items, we did not learn much about what the ethics champion achieved whatsoever during the 2018 year.